Give the people what they want, no matter what. You gotta give them. People want just the basic, for the most part, just the basic fundamental things of life. And the most wonderful part about it all is there's plenty of resources for everyone to have that. But because of greed and mean and spiteful energies, we have what we have today. Lack and want and sorrow and pain. And where does it stem from? In our society. Let's just keep it real, because that's what we do here on, oh, by the way, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and you are at the right place. Well, sort of a different time. For those of you who are on the mail list, you noticed that we sent a notice that we were changing the time tonight from 6:30 start time to 7 start time. So different time, same action, same folks. And I thank you for those of you who are tuning in this evening with our revised and a delayed time start. But nonetheless, it's our goal that we will make it well worth the weight. And as I was saying, who do we hold significantly responsible for this lack? Well, let's start with ourselves, because this is, at least in America, a country for the people, by the people, and of the people. But then we cannot let those so-called leaders off the hook. And I'm not just talking about political leaders. So we can by no means let all leaders off the hook. And so we're going to talk about that somewhat this evening. Somewhat, I said. Yep, you caught that right. Somewhat. Somewhat we're going to talk about that. If you missed last week's program, you are certainly going to want to go into the archives. Let me just put that out there. Because last week, well, it didn't actually flow as we had totally intended. We had a couple of guests that were going to really bring some energy to us that is so much needed, some uplifting energy. And just due to live radio and the nature of some of the circumstances surrounding us reaching out to our guest, it just was not to be. So we're going to bring those guests back. But we did have one of our regulars, Ula Pasternak, who was able to join us, and we really laid out some foundational principles for understanding who we really are and how we're supposed to exist. So tune in from the last week's archives, and of course you'll just go to blogtalkradio.com/Renford, and once you get to the website, of course, just scroll down until you see Daryl Clark's Progressive News Weekly, and then you can just click on the date from last week. But back to this evening's program, which we did start a bit late. So for all of our listeners who are just tuning in, tonight's program started at 7 o'clock as opposed to 6:30. So don't panic if you're just getting on. Tonight, we opened up with a bumper tune, "Got to Give the People What They Want." And as I was saying, people basically, for the most part, I mean, you have those who just want the world. The yacht can't be big enough. The mansion can't be big enough. The estate can't be big enough. But for the most part, people just want basic fundamentals to be comfortable and happy and be with their families. And there's plenty of resources for all. So who do we look to? As I said, first we need to look to us, at least here in America. There's no dictatorship. We have a right to vote, get involved, have free speech, as we're having here tonight, talk about calling people to the carpet for accountability. Now, that takes a significant effort, because even though it's government for the people, by the people, and of the people, this government, and we're going to talk about this significantly, is significantly run by those who hold the purse strings, the money movers. And so we are going to get into, we're going to get into that tonight somewhat. So, yes, we do have to hold ourselves accountable, but we must hold our so-called, and I mean that literally, our so-called leaders responsible as much or more. You know, in an ideal world, being unrealistic, I'll be the first to admit, our leaders should set the stage. No different than in a family, the head of the household or the heads of the household, be it a single household of a mother or a father or a dual household of parents. They set the stage. And no, it's not so much a democracy where the children have so much input because they are children. But to the extent that those who are the head set the stage, it is very similar. And so, tonight, we're going to talk about those so-called leaders. That's where we're going to come from tonight, and how that fits in the scheme of the environment here in America, at least. And we may dabble upon some other societies, but right now we're going to stay within the framework of our United States. And for those of you who are listening overseas, we do have from time to time some listeners overseas. That's the beauty of our web-based program, We do have listeners outside of our borders. So for tonight, we're going to talk about this government for the people, by the people, and of the people, and who's responsible for the lack of. I can't state enough how apropos that opening song was. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, that was the OJs, Got to Give the People What They Want. So get that. Who was that? I'm sure most people knew that particular cut. But it was so apropos. With all the resources we have, not only should we give the people what they want, but we can give the people what they want. And so we come back to, why aren't the people getting what they want? And we have to look at two things. With this government we're in the United States, ourselves, because we have a right, so-called, to vote and protest and speak freely, which, don't misunderstand me, there are some limitations there, because the purse strings usually rule, especially in this day and age of technology. But now, speaking of technology, with the advent of cellular phones and social media, we can have a greater impact as grassroots. Still and yet, the purse strings, I believe, do rule. And we're going to talk about some of these things. And with that, let me just start off with who our guests are tonight. We have two special guests, and I say special because as much as I do this, and you who listen regularly know, this is a labor of love, so to speak. It's not really a labor, but it does take time and effort. And as I always say, if anyone wants to help out, please drop me an email at Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore, C-L-A, 1-8 at MSN.com. And love to take your ideas. If you want to participate in some of the programming, always looking for input. So you're welcome with that. But again, one of the highlights, one of the perks of doing this is, from time to time, not only do I get to bring news and information that's gathered from around the world, primarily in the United States, but from time to time, I get to not only have a guest who is astute, remarkable mind, a critical thinker, but sometimes they're actually colleagues and friends who I highly respect. And tonight is one of those nights. So, again, if you're on the mail list, then you know that our first guest is Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. And Mr. Ronald Crenshaw is, he's a political activist, very astute. He's spoken in various forums in New York City and various other venues. He has become respected for his acumen on history. And as a historian, brings the historical impact of what is currently happening today. So Ron's going to be our first guest, and then we're going to have another special person who has been a friend and colleague and has been on Progressive News, although she's well overdue. And she may laugh if she's on the with us right now in the back office. I believe she is on with us listening. She is a journalist. She's an editor of the BlackAgendaReport.com, which is a social and political news media website, which is becoming well-renowned and respected nationally. And, well, Margaret's going to highlight our political environment, given what is presented in the mainstream media, with a backdrop of some of the current events going on. So hold on to your seats. We did start at 7 as opposed to 6:30. We were running into a different time frame today, but we are going to cover as much as we can in the time frame we have. And what we don't cover, we will pick up, because you know how we do that. We don't shortchange a very important topic. So with that said, I want to bring to the airwaves first Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. Ron, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Darrell, for inviting me. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. And, well, I can say about our country as a whole, I do love it, but there's a lot of criticism I can put forth about it. And I think one of the main things to start off would be that we live in a class society. And that means that there are people who, as you've already said, that hold the purse strings. And the people on the other side of that are the people that work for those who hold the purse strings. So that's what we mean by class, the ability for one to rule over the other. So those who are in the who hold the purse strings also hold the government. They control the government totally. No ifs, ands, and buts. I mean, capitalism is capitalism because it depends on wealth, and that's what steers the country. So with that said, we can spread out to other areas that the major problem is between capital and labor. Labor is the working class, and the purse strings are the ruling class. So I think we have all that, you know, be aware of that. And, of course, this affects profoundly our electoral system, because that's where money is needed. So therefore, those who are elected are beholden to those who have the purse strings and not to those who do the voting, per se. So, I mean, you can see all the people who want to run and all of that, and people who will say they can do this, they can do that, when, you know, the purse string is running the show. So we can say that we can, I'll put it this way, we can think in terms of there's a party that is the lesser of the two evils, as it said. But in actuality, no, there's no lesser of the two evils. See, so, I mean, using that, you know, euphemistically, because it's all one thing. So they're willing to go so far, the ruling elites are willing to go so far, and then they draw back and won't go any further. See, so, I mean, that's the way things are. And the relationship of the police, of course, is dominated by those who hold the purse strings. So you see their behavior and how cavalier they work. So you know that that in and of itself shows a lack of democracy, because the willy-nilly killing of innocent people, you know, is just overbearing. To say the least, just really overbearing. So I just wanted to interject that because.
Okay, Ron. Let me Let me interject because I think there's an interesting synergy going on, or that will take place. when we bring Ms. Margaret Kimberly on, our journalist from blackagendareport.com. I recommend highly that any of our listeners who have not been to that site, you need to bookmark that one, blackagendareport.com.
Right.
No spaces.
Right.
It's an excellent website, and it gives a different perspective, I would say, than what I think the average person takes. But maybe I'm wrong on that, and we'll talk with Margaret about that in just a moment. But first, I want to pose a question to you, and I'm gonna ask Margaret to join in. And so, if we can kind of work this as a panel, if you don't mind, I like to do that. I think we'll get more out of for the listeners and for all involved.
Very good, very good, very good.
Okay, so now everyone knows, well, not everyone, but most people know tonight is sort of the kickoff of this presidential political season, and considering the backdrop of what's been happening in Black America over the last years in terms of what's been hitting mainstream, because don't misunderstand us, we've been talking about this for well over a year. These aren't things that just started. It's just that they've been, because of social media primarily, been hitting the mainstream left and right, although I do believe there's been an uptick in the aggression of it. I do believe that, and we can talk about that as well. But given all of this environment and the Republicans, you know, kick themselves off today, tell me what you see as the difference, generally speaking, we don't want to get into too much detail, between the Republicans who are interestingly trying to woo the Black and the minority vote. From, you know, they want to get the Latino, and they talk about, for example, well, Donald Trump is one who is claiming that, he believes that it is an atrocity with some of the violence that's taken place with our law enforcement against minorities. He made a comment I heard about 2 weeks ago when asked, you know, how do you feel about the the extreme brutality towards African Americans that have been unwarranted, and he made a response, and don't quote me on this, but something to the extent of, well, I would just hope that it is not across the board, and that it is, and I'm just paraphrasing, that it is not something that is just systemic within all of our law enforcement. And I felt as though it was kind of an avoidance in terms of providing a direct input to the question. So what do you see looking at the two parties in terms of how African Americans will be impacted with this particular upcoming election and with all that's taken place in the media with regard to African Americans, how that might impact the emphasis towards the politicians trying to address the Black issue?
Let me say this. We've, at least myself, we've lived through several elections, especially, presidential elections. And I've seen variations and changes that I have. I mean, it went from the civil rights thing to there was a lot of change there. Superficial, but there was changes. And that was due to outside forces, the Soviet Union coming into power and then the United States had to grapple with how to change things so that they may stay the same, because that's basically what goes on. You make a change so that things can stay the same, because, of course, the essential thing is that those who hold the purse strings want to continue to increasing those purse strings that they have. So they only go so far as they can figure keeping what they have and augmenting that. So the relationship of, it's really a one, in other words, boiling down what I have to say is that it's a one-party system, and it just has two branches. And the two branches may vary in how they see something, but in overall, it's going to still be those who hold the purse strings oppressing those who do not. It's that's the way it is simplistically. That's going to go on, and to think that you're going to get a qualitative change, there can't be. There just can't be, because it's, you know, things must change. It's the old saying, things must change so that they can stay the same. That's my summation about it. If someone wants to be more specific in some specific area, they can take me there if they want to, but that's how I see it.
Let's bring Ms. Margaret Kimberly on, senior columnist for Agenda Report. Margaret, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to another Progressive News Weekly. You are so overdue, and we are so glad to have you join us.
Yes, I am overdue, but I'm glad to be here. Oh. Thank you so much, Daryl.
It's been a while, but
yes.
I see all the the work you're doing on Black Agenda Report website. You are continuing. You haven't ceased. How would you address that? I mean, in terms of where we are with this political presidential season coming up, as it may impact African Americans.
Well, I think it's not going to impact us very well if we just do what we've been doing and continue to only vote for Democrats without making demands of them. I don't believe, I heard what you said about the Republicans looking for black votes. I believe they are looking for Latino votes. The Latino vote can be in play, but I think their hope for black voters is just to keep the turnout low with their various voting restrictions now and with Obama not being on the ballot. They have hopes for just keeping the turnout low and keeping us from voting. But our reliance on the Democratic Party without demand has been a failure. We have nothing to show for the support without pressure directed at the Democrats. Black people in office, and you know, for the past 6 years, we've had a black person in the highest office. But that has done little to affect the lives of ordinary working people across the country. So I believe we need to, not only that, we need to stop thinking about this lesser of two evils. At Black Agenda Report, we say that Democrats, and in particular President Obama, is the more effective evil, not really the lesser evil.
Very good.
And I'll give you an example. During the debate back in 2012, his first debate with Mitt Romney, where it's generally agreed the president didn't do well, the very first question was about Social Security and would you change Social Security. And Obama said, well, I'm sure that Governor Romney and I agree on this issue. And of all the things for people to remember about the debate, that is the thing that sticks in my mind. It tells the whole story of the rottenness of our system, this two-party duopoly that we have, We even have people who've done data on the lack of democracy that we have, that we don't really have it, that Americans get the opposite of what they want, no matter how much we vote, no matter if the party we want is in power. We do not get the things that we want to see. So I think it's important to understand the limits of the electoral system in a system such as ours, where money rules, where the Supreme Court even said that money is speech. The amount of money that the Republicans have raised before the primaries have even started is just astounding, that these hedge fund chieftains that nobody ever heard of are going to determine who the Republican nominee is going to be. I think it's also true for the Democrats. I think they're all lined up for Hillary Clinton. But the last election set a record, $1 billion raised in the last presidential election, and who knows what the number will be in 2016. And it's only 2015, by the way. We have a little more than a year to go before the next president is elected. So I think black people need to look forward to themselves. We made our greatest strides during the liberation movement of the 60s and the 70s, and half of black America couldn't even vote. Half of black people lived in the South and didn't even have the right to vote. So we can accomplish some significant things, but the first thing we have to do, frankly, is free ourselves from the expectations of electoral politics. We have to look outside the two parties. We have to stop saying that, you know, the Green Party, who I support, I voted for the Green Party candidate in the last election, that they're just spoilers and they can't do anything. I think it's time to say the system has to be shaken up. What do we get when we have Democrats in power? The first 2 years of Barack Obama was in office in 2009 and 2010, we had a Democratic president and Democratic control of both the House and the Senate. And they did not raise the minimum wage. Now they talk about it all the time, now that the Republicans run Congress and there's no chance of it happening. But they had a golden opportunity to raise the federal minimum wage. But it didn't happen. And this is with the Democratic control of the White House and Congress. We still have wars. We have, you know, Obama, you know, thanks to excellent marketing, was marketed as a peace candidate. But lest we forget, he says, I'm not against war, I'm just against dumb wars. We have as much American aggression abroad. We have an escalation, a dangerous situation with Russia, which does not have to be. It's all because of, well, this, you know, old-fashioned term people don't use enough anymore, and that's imperialism. So what do we have to show for it? Black people lost a huge amount of the little bit of wealth that we have in the 2008 recession and have not recovered. We have not recovered our jobs. So I think it's important for us to understand the limitations of the electoral system before we go down this road yet again.
All right, that's a you made a good point along the way there that stood out for me amongst the many good points that I heard you say, and that is you spoke of the elite. I want to run this one by you, Margaret, and then I would like Ron to weigh in on it. So what about the – and this is an open question and intendedly general. What about the black elite?
Well, we call it the Black Agenda Report the misleadership class, the misleaders, the politicians, the organizations like the NAACP and Urban League and others who are beholden to corporate interests. And so they do well for themselves. They get good gigs, and they make good money, and they get attention, and they're in the media. They get to rub shoulders with the president or whomever, but they represent only themselves as a class. So so that's a problem. And in this week's Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford has a story about high-stakes testing. And white middle-class parents are in open revolt against high-stakes testing. But the NAACP and the Urban League are encouraging black parents to keep their kids in these high-stake tests. And it's just a classic example of how they do not represent our interests. And they are used as a cover. They give cover to politicians, to Obama, and he's not the first, and to others. But they do less and less, and they speak for us less and less as time goes by. So that's what the black elite amounts to, frankly. And I think we need to stop thinking in terms of elites anyway. And we need to bring everyone into the fray, into political activism.
That's excellent. Very I appreciate it. Ron, weigh in on that. The black elite.
Well, I can't do any better. I mean, she's been right on the money everywhere she went. I can only bow to her. I'll be frank, you know, because the war is in its essence, the war is not about black and white. The war is about the ruling elites oppressing all labor, you see. So what the ruling elites do is they bifurcate the working class. They give the more privilege to the white workers and less privilege to the non-white workers. That's to keep them divided. But in essence, it is a class, it's class oppression. That's what we're seeing. And as you said, she's right on the money. I can't, I can only bow to her. Okay, let me put that out there straight up. Because, but I don't see it as, in essence, it's not race, but the race is used and it is believed in deeply about by a lot of white people and some black people also. But it's beyond that. It's a thing where it wants to keep the people unaware of what's taking place. Because every time they see fit to have some kind of war, they don't tell the truth to the public. They tell them lies, and then they go to war. They don't even have plebiscites or anything like that. They go, they put it in the paper, they tell us lies, and they go to war because they feel they can win it. So, I mean, yeah, it's a rotten system. You know, capitalism is actually rotten, rotten to the core. I can't think of any better word to express it. And it's just that, you know, it's when you, you know, open it up, you can see that. I mean, it's over and over. Look how they treat the white soldiers that come back maimed and, you know, disfigured, you know, and post-traumatic stress syndrome. They can't even be doctored on properly. You know, I mean, it's really murderous when, you know, when you can analyze it. So, you know, I speak more in generality, but she's on the money with the particulars.
I'm gonna bring in our engineer from time to time, and I'm honored have him as a colleague over the last near decade. Cecil, can you weigh in on this?
Yes, I can. And by the way, everybody's doing an excellent job. My observation is that everyone is practicing the art and perfecting the art of telling people what they want to hear. They tell the gays what they want to hear. They tell the blacks what they want to hear. They tell the whites what they want to hear. All of these to serve one end. You know, all of it serves one purpose, and that is to keep the elitist group in the position that they're in. They tell the youth what they want to hear. We wouldn't have, I in my opinion, so many wars inside our borders. I'm not even talking about outside. I'm talking about the wars in the African American communities. If our people would do that, we elect would do a good job of making sure that guns didn't get in our communities. You know, there are no black manufacturing plants in any of the inner cities that make guns. They don't make bullets. Yet, plenty of guns and plenty of bullets find their way into our community. The more they take up, you know, the more this seems to still be out there. So it's like there's a gun seed, and they're just throwing it in the ground and just growing more guns, you know. They're perfecting the art of telling us what they think we want to hear, even though what our eyes are telling us is totally different. But that, in my perspective, is basically what's going on. Tell them whatever
you
they
know,
need
I,
to hear.
I can relate to that aspect of it's similar to drugs. There's no black drug pen that's been identified, because if he or she were, they would have been posted everywhere. So it's the same thing. But yet we're the ones that are using the drugs disproportionately to destroy ourselves. Same thing with guns. And so to that end, I believe that we have to look at what you said, however, not without considering the systemic mind control that's being used by the think tanks. And as Margaret said earlier, we have to understand that this is by design. And those weren't her words, but in effect, that's what I read. This is not some coincidence. This is a ruling class. And we need to understand that this system is not set up for us. And I'm speaking of African Americans now.
Mm-hmm.
I believe because of this, as Ron said, this system that we're in, it's really not just designed to take out blacks. It is a class and caste system. It's just whoever happens to be at the lowest of the totem pole gets pressed first and the most. And we happen to be there because of our history, the way we were brought in, the way that our minds have been controlled. So it was much easier for them to control us because it is about money. I mean, if you look at the great the penal system, that is basically a slave factory. And with blacks predominating over 50%, with us only contributing 13% to the population, it's very
mm-hmm.
clear. I would say no woman is birthing a criminal. But the way that the system is designed by third grade, well, two years ago, I was saying fourth grade, because this is a conversation we've had over the years. But now I have to say by third grade, and at the pace it's going, perhaps by second grade next year, as soon as next
social
year, but clearly the pace we're heading. So by third, fourth grade, our youth, especially our black males, when you consider the heavy indoctrination of our minds by that elite class. And let me look up my notes here, because I love what did Kimber, what did Margaret, she called it the misleader. The misleaders. No, she hit it right on the head. We got to look
Absolutely.
At, and it's not just rappers. It's our athletes. I mean, you can go back to the 60s and something else she said. She's going to get the star for tonight. She said, we were so much further ahead during the 60s. Come on, we're talking half a century ago. I mean, we have really regressed. Back then, if you were an entertainer or an athlete, you were almost pressured to have some conscientiousness about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the opposite now.
Oh, it's exactly the opposite now. And, you know, one of the other things, of course, that has happened is even as it is disintegrating, capitalism is becoming more and more predatory. So the neoliberal system that we have has just undone any of the progress that black
right.
people made in the past
right.
50
right.
years. So we don't have, we used to have living wage jobs, but the deindustrialization, you know, sending jobs to industries, whole industries to China and to other countries, means there are industries that don't exist anymore. And black people had a chance to have a living wage employment, and that doesn't exist any longer. And there are whole swaths of the country, the so-called Rust Belt, where that have just been devastated. So not only do have we moved backwards politically, but that's also because of the economic forces and the ruling class decisions to gut the excuse me, the industrialized economy, and that has been devastating to black people. So that's another reason that we have moved backwards in the past few decades.
May
you know,
I
it's interesting
add to that also that
go ahead.
The preacher, the imam, et cetera, the spiritual leaders in the communities were in the 60s and earlier a force to be reckoned with in terms of galvanizing the people and moving them in a positive direction. But with the advent of more churches being able to become 501c3, that was the demise of that segment of the community, because, as you know, now when you're receiving funds, when you are tax exempt on your 501c3 tax designation, you can't speak out, you know, or you can be sanctioned, or better yet, you can lose your 501c3. You lose your little meal ticket. So that has silenced a lot of the ministers and so forth in the African American community.
You know, that's a good point. And I remember when that took place, I believe that was Bush 1, Lee.
Well, I'm going to disagree a little here. I think most churches were always nonprofits. It's the, you have to be careful. The nonprofit cannot make a political endorsement or a political contribution or lobby for a specific legislation, but the individual can. I think what changed with the church is the various things we've all been talking about. There are a lot of preachers out here today who are just crooks. I call them preacher/businessmen, and they do what they do to make money. The church has changed, you know, because times change. You know, the church is not the focus of our lives the way it used to be, but, you know, that's not in and of itself a good or bad thing, but we have these, every preacher now, for example, is a bishop. It used to be there were certain denominations that had bishops, but Baptists, for example,
right.
I'm a Baptist, did not have bishops. You just, there's no hierarchy in the church. All of a sudden, overnight, everybody's calling himself bishop, and these are always people who are crooks. They use the pulpit to make a lot of money, and it's the pulpit is their meal ticket. So Al Sharpton being one of the worst. We had an article last year in Black Agenda Report, Al Sharpton, King Rat. So anybody who's interested should just Google King Rat Al Sharpton, and you'll see our article.
Ouch.
He is the worst. But so, yes, we have a whole breadth of institutions and people who used to represent us who don't anymore, who represent themselves. And a lot of these clergy are among the worst of the misleaders. And actually, it's not true. There were, you know, we think automatically of King and other preachers who were leading the movement, but they, a lot of them weren't always on board, and a lot of them ditched King once he started talking about the war and he started talking about economics. Some of his own people, his own father said, why are you going in this direction? So I think it's important to keep those things in mind.
I agree with you. I'm going to disagree a little bit on the religious piece because I don't consider it an absolute, but relatively speaking, I might go with most. But I do believe there are some that are still trying to be legitimate. But the interesting part about that is those that are trying to be legitimate are not growing, and I think that the pressure is against them, and they have to be more creative and think outside the box in this new age now. Because the new age is saying, you need to be this. You need to be a bishop if you want to be successful. And it's unfortunate that those who, and I think there are some churches want to do right and are trying to do right, but just
there
are not in the right manner. And I do think with regard to these CDCs that many churches, in addition to being a nonprofit, you're right. This is what I was referring to. I said, I think it was Bush 1 that said, okay, we're going to have a relationship through their through their CDCs where we will engage the churches. And that's what I'm referring to. And I do remember that well. I could do research on it.
Yes, yes. I understand what you mean. Yes.
So through the CDCs, churches could actually become involved in the political process.
Well, churches
and
got
many of them have these
suddenly allowed to get contracts for things that they weren't eligible
before.
For previously.
That was
through
that was
a CDC
move. That was a great move on their part. Faith-based initiatives were actually demonetized. Civic groups and other groups who worked outside of churches and so forth that actually helped to develop the community. A lot of community development programs now, a lot of CDFs and others that were in the community that actually helped to develop the community from an economic standpoint and others. They were defanged with the faith-based initiative because it moved a lot of funding that was there onto the auspices of the church, and that was good. That was great for them because they knew churches were not doing anything for people for the most part anyway. So if we move all this money over there, then churches can continue to give the facade or the illusion that they're doing things when they're doing nothing. And basically that was a way to reward them for doing nothing.
Correct. That is on point, Steve. That is so true. And that was part of that, the whole, I'm telling you, you got to give credit where it's due. They did a heck, this think tank over the last, I'd say 40 years, 40 to 50 years, they did a heck of a job. Not that it was a righteous and a benevolent thing, but in terms of being a effective. Well, you know, Kimberly, you're going to get so many stars in this because you did say that this, that you're saying it's the more effective of the evils, I believe is how you put it.
Yes. Yeah. That's it. It's not the, you know, there's both evil. They're just effective. That's it.
Yeah,
we
they
don't
did.
Have,
well, I'd like to enter in on this too. For one, churches are not into analysis of political history or anything of that sort. They're you know, in the mainly based on belief, so they're not so much into being analytical and being precise on physical things. So that's something that leaves to be desired, you know. I hate, you know, I usually try to avoid conversations about the church because a lot of people are into it because they were raised that way, and they don't realize how the church is now not up to date with what's going on. And, you know, that's the way it is because, you know, you can see, if you follow the history of the United States in particular, you can see that it's an oligarchy. And what the things that come forth to me immediately is the Federal Reserve Bank, how that was originated and how it never got put into the Constitution. It was drawn up by big bankers from Europe and the United States, and that rules the Treasury. And when the collapse came in 2007 and 2008, the president said that, you know, some corporations are too big to fail. Well, in capitalism, nothing is too big to fail. they were supposed to be nationalized so that once they got on their feet, the people would own them and would recoup their money. That didn't happen. What they gave us was austerity program, austerity to make up for the losses that the banks did in criminal acts. So, I mean, you know, it goes deep into understanding the political nature of capitalism. That's why, that's where the center of all this is. So I just want to, you know, lay that out there, because that's what's happened, and that shows that, you know, we have to understand what we're dealing with first before we can move forward.
That's well, you said it. Understanding the political nature of capitalism, that comes back to part of the whole plan of the system, which is to dummy us down, and not just figuratively, but literally. If you look at the educational system, we're teaching, we're allowing them to teach our children. For those of us who do not, you know, go to the homeschool approach or some other approach where you can have input. They are, from my perspective, and I've really looked at this more than a few ways. We even did a panel on this a year ago or 2 years ago. They are dumbing our children down by intent. This is all part of that think tank regime, and this is not a conspiracy theory. This is just the fact of the matter. Well, Margaret, there you go again. You spoke on this, the fact that there are whites that are saying, Nope, we're against the high-stakes test. Because they're saying what worked maybe 40, well, let me get real, what worked 70 years ago does not work in today's environment. And we're still teaching reading, writing, arithmetic. And we're supposed to be teaching these children when they're in middle, end of grade school, end of elementary school, about self-sufficiency, about truly being able to establish oneself through self-empowerment of having one's own business. That's what we're supposed to be teaching. Civics has gone out the window. Whatever happened to that? So in terms of understanding what you were saying, the political process, Ron, that this was well done. They did a job on this country.
Right.
Yeah. May I ask the panel a question?
What's that?
Are we familiar with what they're doing in Texas right now with the school books in taking slavery out of the school books? Any mentioning of slavery is being stricken from the school books in Texas deliberately?
I know that they have changed the Texas textbooks. They also, the College Board, the organization that gives the SATs and other testing, excuse me, recently changed the curriculum for advanced placement American history, the advanced placement tests, which give high school kids college credits. And they recently revamped the curriculum under pressure from conservatives to emphasize American exceptionalism, as they put it. And I always want to say exceptionally what. But this is propaganda. There's no other word for it to describe what we are subjected to in this country. We are propagandized in school. We are propagandized by the corporate media. You can read the New York Times and the Washington Post every day and still not know the things you should know.
They follow the
administration line, whoever the president is, if it's a Republican, if it's a Democrat. You can watch, if you're aware of it, you can see. When a story breaks, they wait for a while to see what the administration will say before they do any reporting. So we're propagandized.
Right.
There is no two ways about it.
Exactly.
Yep. It's part of the system that is consciously being put in. Ron, to your point, it's because labor is critical. We cannot have folks educated, and that's what you speak of so often, Ron.
Yes, that's true.
It's a part of capital. They have to have an underclass.
Right. That's right, and that's what King saw in his anti-Vietnam speech. He spoke to that once they got involved with the Vietnam, they weren't thinking anything about helping the poor. is they want to pour all their money into that because they expect to get more aggrandizement of taking over the country, getting its resources as they see fit, all of that.
And so that's when he crossed the line from their perspective. Let me come back to this debate before we wrap up. We have about 5 minutes. And I want to start talking about, okay, now then, no, since this, now what? So we've talked about that, and we've enlightened some folks that are listening in. I didn't take calls intentionally. We've enlightened some folks. We've mentioned some things like this, what's happening in Texas, about the testing that's taking place, about the fact that there must be an underclass, as you say, Ron. But let's talk about now what. Now, I heard Margaret early on say, well, we've got to stop. We've got to stop giving these parties a pass. And I can't remember how you exactly put it, Margaret. Without holding them accountable to us. You know, that's one piece of it. Talk with me about one piece. If I left these airways without mentioning this debate, I'd be remiss. Donald Trump, the forerunner,
mm-hmm.
talks about, and I'm thinking about this industrialization, the Rust Belt. I was born in the Rust Belt. I'm Cleveland, Ohio, born and raised, me and all my siblings. So I know about that, and I've seen the transition. I remember when General Electric left town, where I
mm-hmm.
basically got me to go to school from my dad. And it was a big deal. It was like AT&T in New Jersey, and everybody who knows New Jersey knows what that was like when they left. They employed a significant portion, second highest employer next to the government. So when you have that kind of deindustrialization, you devastate. Now, Donald Trump is saying China and Japan, they're taking all the jobs, and I'm not going to have it. I'm taking it. I'm going to bring them back. And he's getting a lot of ears. I'm going to say he's also getting a lot of ears of blacks as well, because blacks are so desperate for something. And unfortunately, we, and I'm proud of my race, we are ignorant too much. That's why we try to bring to the airways knowledge and information so that folks can say, I didn't know that. What? So I want each of you, as we close, to weigh in. What is this? Now, Donald Trump wouldn't be where he was if it wasn't for money. So that ties into what you've been on, and same thing with Margaret and Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about money. Now, he very well may win this. They say probably not because he's so radical. But just because of his money and some of the things he's smart enough to say, remember you all said at one point, they're saying what people want to hear. But he's talking about saying no more, these exporting of jobs, no more. Let's protect what we have. Remember when we were kids, because everybody on the line is about, you know, of age to know, if you wore some Japanese sneakers, you got laughed at. Remember that? Come on now. Keep it real. If you had some talking, we were kids, knee high. I remember.
Right.
Oh, look at so-and-so.
Right.
He got stuff is made in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Now all that's changed.
Right.
Stay in on the Donald Trump, call it Donald Trump syndrome. On that.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, Daryl, that you know, a broken, I like to say, use this expression, a broken clock is right twice a day. You know, I have no affinity with Donald Trump whatsoever, but you know, the outlier candidates say things, the establishment candidates, the ones who can raise the money and therefore are, you're a viable candidate means you can raise a lot of money. That's what it means. Let's be clear.
Right. Exactly.
But they all follow a party line. So the Democratic nominee, the Republican nominee, whoever they end up being, are not going to say that we need to bring manufacturing back to the United States, because that is not what the finance capital wants to have happened. It didn't happen by accident or by osmosis. The people they're depending on for money want the system to be this way.
Exactly.
So it's someone who I, you know, otherwise can't agree with at all, who's the only one who will say what's clearly true. we need to have manufacturing back in the United States so people can have a living wage. Now, I'm not going to be a Trump supporter. He is, you know, like the worst, a rich person who's kind of dumb, so which is like the worst possible combination you can have. But at any rate, so it's the Trumps who will say this, or Ron Paul or Rand Paul will talk about the United States not creating wars all over the world. But why is it the Pauls? Why is it Donald Trump who will say these things? Why isn't the establishment candidates, why do they never say what is so clearly true and what most Americans would like to see? So so that's a big part of what I was talking about. And these elites, the ruling class, whatever, the 1%, whatever you want to call them, they don't want to have jobs back in the United States. The current system works just fine for them. So it's left to a Trump or some other outlier to say these things.
Right.
Now, do you think he's just saying these things, or do you think he really – now, we know he believes it because it's the truth. Now, the question, though, is he sincere about what he's saying? Now, we can't read his heart or his mind, but I'm just weighing in on the
wait a minute.
This call.
He doesn't have to be sincere, because if he becomes president, there's nothing people are going to do. He doesn't have to be sincere. Their thing is to promise, to push people in their direction. They're to promise. Once they get there, whatever the agenda is supposed to be will go forward. It has nothing to do with the campaigning. These are all the things put up there for people to get excited and to rush to the polls to vote for one or the other when the same agenda is there already.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You see what I mean? It's not something that's going to be, you know, intricate that you have to. No, all of this stuff is to get people involved in voting. This is brainwashing. This is another form of brainwashing. They do all of this just on purpose, but the agenda
mm-hmm.
is already set.
Exactly.
They're not going to vary from the real agenda. They say whatever they want because there's no plebiscite to get them out of office once they're in office.
So we're talking about a 1,000
people
points.
People may disagree with me, but that's
so, no. Let me say so.
Huh?
I asked this question for a reason, because I'm not a talking head. And those of you, you, I hope you know that. I believe in action. I believe in, if you're going to have a media, whether it's a website or it's a radio or it's a publication, that it should not be about, well, this is it. It should be about, okay, this is it. Now what? And the reason why I posted that question was for our listeners, and we have a significant number, especially in our archives, and I want them to understand, and I didn't want it to come from Daryl. I wanted them to understand that let's look at history. Now, we learned early on, I think they're still teaching, 2 points create a pattern, 3 points really create a pattern. So we go back to Bush 1, 1,000 points of light. There are these themes. There's always been something, right? Clinton, let's start thinking about tomorrow. I can't remember who the song was. Was it Obama, change, right? And so now you have Trump saying, let's bring back the jobs. So I appreciate what you said, and I appeal to our listeners to really think twice here about what's going on. Trump is a celebrity, and he would not even be close to where he's at if it weren't for his dollars. And he could not speak what he's saying if it weren't for his dollars. They would have ousted him. But he does have a lot of money. That's
mm-hmm.
undeniable. He has the money to be able to say the things, truthful or not, that he's saying. He's being outlandish, and he's speaking that. And as Ron or Margaret said, or both, he is a party principal. Let's not forget that, folks. He's a party principal. and you have one side that will talk about, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, one side that's pro-gun, anti-gun, but it's all one body. It's all one body. And there was something that was profound that was said on the air tonight about a half an hour ago about something that really stood out. I think it was you, Mark. You said it really stood out. And it was at a debate where one of the candidates, I think it was Obama, that said, I think we agree on this.
Absolutely.
I want that to resonate in the listener's mind as you
yes,
step away
good.
Tonight.
Very good.
I would just ask that the listeners think about that. And that's off it. I bet if you went back on debates, at some point you'll find those that to be a common phrase. I think we can agree on that. And I think if we let resonate as we go into these debates, because I feel bad because most of Americans are gullible. We know that because of the way the system has been successful in perpetuating the same thing year after year for the last 100 years. So our society is gullible. And what I believe, you know, we need to do is at least give them something to think about, just something to think about. An alternative perspective. I'm not hating on this country. I love it. I wouldn't want to be in Bangladesh. Listen, folks, if that's what we're about here, I'm out. I'm not in it. I don't think that's what we're about, though. I think what we're all saying is there is a better way, but we've got to become knowledgeable and educated. And right now the odds are against us because of the purse strings, but through forums like everyone on this line, this panel, and this is an esteemed panel, the Margaret's forum, and what you do, and you speak publicly, Ron, and Cecil with his various forums that he has with the publishing company and so forth, that just have to continue to try to educate a few at a time and just let it germinate. I just believe we never give up. Like me and a partner used to say, and this a childhood friend that very near and dear to me, and we used to say, Daryl, we never give up when we know that we're on the right track. And that's where I am. I live by that.
Now.
And I just want to thank you all for taking the time out from your busy, busy schedules to help folks to understand, to see, because they're getting ready to go into a season where they're going to get, and they're so unprepared. You know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the average American, white, black, Asian, green, purple, all the aliens that are down here, too, for those who believe they're here. I'm speaking to everyone. I'm serious. Listen, we started, the season starts tonight, this political season, this season of ambush. And I'm not being cynical. I'm not being anti-American. I'm really not. Because,
of course not.
Ron, you're the historian. History speaks for itself. What has occurred?
It
we are still in dire straits. And in some sense, i.e. African-American, we're worse. Now, those will say, no. I can turn on the NAACP awards. I can turn on the Soul Train awards. I can see a whole auditorium, 10,000 people full of rich blacks, okay? And if you drop a bomb on them, you probably lose about 90% of all the black rich people in America.
Yeah.
And, well, it shouldn't be about black people wanting to be rich anyway. We should be striving to change this system and to give opportunity, not just opportunity, but a voice to everyone. So I think it's a mistake to, and I understand, you know, wanting the group to succeed and as individuals wanting to succeed. I get that, but I think we should be striving for something different, striving to end poverty so that nobody's poor any longer, or
exactly.
That we don't have these stark differences among different classes in the United States. So I'd hope that's something that we would be looking at now and not trying to buy into what is a failed system for and hoping that some black people succeed in a failing, corrupt system.
I agree.
I agree, too. I agree 100%.
Well said. Well, you know, as we go into this season, I'd like to put everyone on the spot. I love doing this, especially with friends. I'd like to ask everyone if they would be willing to come back from time to time, because we've got to get information out, and people are getting ready to get blindsided. They aren't prepared. You all know what I'm talking about. The average American is not prepared for this. They're getting ready to get bamboozled.
Correct.
This is like Super Bowl evening for the next year and a half. Every evening,
mm-hmm.
They're going to get bombarded with what the establishment wants them to understand, and with the technology is now, it could be subliminal. It could be on a whole new level. So we have to try to bring to the fore, you know, as much as we can about what's really behind it all. And I appreciate y'all. I'd like to, from time to time, have you come back. For example, after the next debate, perhaps let's come back and do a panel and talk about how we can disseminate collectively real information, and then also perhaps we can highlight some examples of the pitfalls of what's being presented, and then something a person can put their teeth into and say, oh, they're right, I see that, that's right. So that's what I would ask. And again, in the meantime,
Bill, I got one question for me.
Yes.
To the panel, if for anybody that we speak to from here on out, there's a distinction. There's one distinction that has never been made in the past 20 years or more that I've heard politicians speak. They speak of an upper class. They speak of a middle class. There is never any mention, and I watched Obama in every single speech, there was never any mention of the underclass or the other group of people, because none of them fit into the middle class and none of them fit into the people who voted for him. The majority of them did not fit in the middle class, and they definitely didn't fit in the upper class. There's an underclass in this society that's I mean, whatever label you want to put on it, underclass, lower class, this or that or the other, but the majority of society was never represented in any political debate. Never.
Well, they don't even
only
say working
class.
I'm glad you say that. We need to stop using the term middle class is worth. It doesn't mean anything. What does it mean?
It sure doesn't.
It doesn't tell you anything.
It sure
it's a way for people to be fooled into thinking they have more than they do. Is it income?
Right.
Is it education?
Exactly.
Is it wealth? What is it? It's meaningless. So what you are is workers. If you work for a living, if you depend on a paycheck to survive, you're a worker. You may have a white collar, you may have a blue collar, but you are a worker. And we need to talk about working.
There's a tool. That's what I'm talking about. We want to empower the listeners with tools. That's a tool. I agree. We don't use that term. We're workers, folks. Get over it. And everybody that smiles at you is not your friend. Get over it. Reminds me of that, what was that group, Undisputed Truth? Let me see if I can find that. We may have it as
smiling
we close.
Smiling Faces sometime.
Yes.
I from my childhood.
We do have it. We're going to close out on that. Folks, remember, listeners, smiling faces sometimes tell lies. So when you go and start watching these debates and the campaign stumps from the Dems and the Repubs and your neighbors who are bought into the system, you know, just step back and really take a second look at it and really, really give it some thought in terms of what's really been accomplished. Do a little bit of homework. Information is available. I'd like to thank our guest, Margaret Kimberly, doing your thing, blackagendareport.com. Folks, go check it out. It's a great website. And also Mr. Ron Crenshaw, our resident historian and political activist, we thank you. I know you're very busy. You have speaking engagements, and you're always on the go. And, of course, my partner, Cecil, always bringing it. And it's not often you like to come from the background, but when you do, you always have something relevant. I apologize for the listeners who wanted to ask a question, but we're going to continue this as we go into this season of the presidential political saga, I can put it that way. And we're going to continue trying to educate you. We're not trying to dissuade you one way or another. I think we all love our country. But we need to stand up for our responsibility. This is a country for the people, by the people, and of the people, and we have a responsibility as the people. So with that, I'm going to say so long. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. Thank you for listening. Remember, you know, smiling faces sometimes.
That's right.
Okay.
They don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got proof. Oh Lord, yeah. Don't tell the truth.